Welcome to Mysterious Japan, Season 1, Episode 6, Mysteries of Jukai. Listener discretion is advised. Mystery surrounding Jukai has led to it becoming a place rife with folklore and urban legends. Some have been debunked, some remain mysteries, and some have been confirmed as fact. We explore Jukai's most famous legends in this episode. Part 1, The Phantom Lake of Blood. According to the rumour, they say, there is a lake in Jukai. It is a phantom lake that appears and disappears. When it appears, it is a lake of red blood. This legend first appeared in the 1960s. People questioned whether a phantom lake could just appear out of nowhere in the middle of the 20th century and then just to suddenly disappear. Most dismissed this as an urban legend, but scientists began a serious investigation. What they found is nothing less than incredible. The Phantom Lake of Blood is real. Yes, it is no rumour. It is not a legend. Scientists discovered that iron-rich deposits in the lava caves, combined with the reddish earth, imbue the water with a blood-like colour, so people can be forgiven for calling it the Lake of Blood. It really does look like blood. So then how does it appear and disappear? The reason behind that is just as incredible. When Mount Fuji erupted in 875, the flowing lava created a cave system connecting Lake Shoji and Lake Saiko. These intertwined lava tubes create pockets of connected caves that also connect to the lakes themselves. And then every 8 to 10 years, a torrential rainfall occurs. Right after these times of heavy rain, the Red Lake appears out of nowhere. The heavy downpour fills up the connecting caves. They cannot contain the water, and the overflow temporarily creates a lake. Scientists named it Lake Akaike, which means the Red Lake. So the Lake of Blood is not supernatural. And it is not blood. The lake is real. In recent years, it appeared in 2004, 2011, 2020, and 2021. Because its floor is covered with grass, the lake will shimmer and change from red to an emerald green when hit just right by the sun. Scientists also determined how Lake Akaike developed. Why did it suddenly appear in the 1960s? It is a recent phenomenon caused by mankind's interference. The government began draining the lakes to generate hydroelectric power in the 1950s. Prior to that, the lake was actually a stable yet small lake of normal colour. These days, when the Phantom Lake appears, tourists line up to get a good view. Some now call it Mount Fuji's Sixth Lake. Keisei Watanabe runs a restaurant near Jukai. In 2011, when the area was hit by a typhoon, she went to see the lake. She remembers when it was a normal lake prior to the 1960s.
This was magical and soothing to look at. I remember when I was young, it was always there. My mother, he told me that she skated on it when it was frozen.
Part 2. Spirit Monks in the Forest. On a trip to Jukai, an American couple deviates from the main trail. They begin to explore the forest. Before too long, they find that they are lost. The trees and irregular landscape have turned them around. They cannot see the sun. Their compass needle turns in different directions. They begin to panic. The woman begins sobbing. The man finds himself unable to think clearly. They kneel on the ground to look for clues and check each side of the trees for moss. They look to the sky but see no sun and no Mount Fuji. The light of day dwindles and they know they will freeze if they have to spend a night here. A Buddhist monk finds them in this state. He does not speak English, but he silently points to the left and begins walking in that direction. They follow, asking questions, but soon becoming silent when the monk only smiles without responding. About an hour later, he stops and points. The main trail is right in front of them. They stumble forward with relief. At the promenade, they turn to thank him. At no one is there, darkness has settled, and they peer into the trees but see no one. The American man says arigato in a thick American accent as they start on the main path. Back at the inn, they tell this story to the innkeeper, who speaks some English and nods politely at their strange tale. Yes, she says with a slight bow. There is a rumour that a Buddhist monk lives inside the forest and stops people from committing suicide. Some say he lives in the forest, but most of us believe he is a saintly spirit who stops people from taking their lives and helps people like you who are lost. This type of story about spirit monks helping people to find their way out of the forest, a normal fodder for the urban legend machine generated around Jukai. These reports happen from time to time, but it is impossible to verify them. In another type of recurring story about monks in Jukai, many people report hearing the sound of Buddhist monks reciting sutras deep in the forest where no one is around. There are no people anywhere and certainly no monks. The chanting itself seems to emanate from thin air. I swear I hear someone chanting a sutra, they say. This repeated phenomenon is so common that it formed a belief among many that ghosts of Buddhist priests inhabit the forest and that they are attempting to thwart the evil there. Other people report hearing the sound of wood paddles beating in a regular rhythm against the trees. This rhythm matches the beat used by Buddhist monks. It may seem unbelievable that there is some evidence that these sounds happen. Whether they are paranormal or subject to scientific explanation is an ongoing debate. The paranormal explanations claim that this common experience must be spiritual in nature, since people distinctly hear the voice of monks chanting sutras and they hear the rhythmic banging of wood. They claim these are spirits lingering in the forest. The scientific debunking of these sounds takes a more skeptical approach. Though the existence of these sounds are admitted, skeptics claim the sounds come from the wind, the breaking or blowing of branches, or even the sound of cars from the passing highway. Or perhaps they claim maybe there are birds like woodpeckers in the forest tapping their beaks against the trees. There is no definitive explanation accepted by all, but they do all agree that the sounds really do occur. Part 3. The Hidden Jukai Village. One urban legend claims that hidden outcasts hide in a secret village inside Jukai. This is called Jukai Mura, translated as Jukai Village. Jukai Mura is said to be full of people who felt abandoned by society, criminals feeling society will never accept them again, and those who feel unloved. Most accounts of this village state that these people had attempted suicide or changed their mind, and instead joined this village of recluses who never show themselves to the outside world. In 2006, a posting on a site called Urban Legend Square.
There are villages in the forest where people who failed to commit suicide or who could not reintegrate into society, even if they changed their mind, created a village hidden from the world.
People began searching Google Maps and other sources. Every time they thought they found the village, it turns out that they found only legitimate settlements, guest houses and buildings. A small cluster of cabins was discovered near Lake Shoji, raising some excitement until it was shown that they are normal guest houses for tourists. Still, some persist in claiming that there is such a micro-society hiding itself from the world in Jukai. According to these adherents, even if there are no buildings, then they may have a society hiding within the caves of Jukai. Therefore, they will not show up in any photographs or maps. They link this to a rumour claiming an extensive and unexplored tunnel network links Narusawa Ice Cave to Enoshima about 100 kilometres away. This would allow them access in Jukai and the ability to exit far outside the forest. But Narusawa Ice Cave is a popular tourist spot. So while they are correct that this large and deep lava cave has never been fully explored, there is also no evidence that a micro-society lives within the tunnel network. And deterred by lack of evidence, adherents to this theory postulate that the Jukai village hypothesis is real, but that the people may live much deeper in these caves or within one of the other hundreds of unexplored cave networks. According to their logic, hiding in this way helps the hidden villagers remain out of sight and completely anonymous. They can come and go at will. Adherents support this theory by drawing from the fact that the cluster area of suicides occurs between the Narusawa Ice Cave and the Fugaku Wind Cave. Thus, they claim this could be a place where they come and go, where they find new members, or where they can engage in mischief. Some local residents claim the actual village did exist just outside the forest, but a flood swept it away many years ago. They do not dismiss the possibility that this micro-society relocated somewhere in the centre of the forest, but most believe that this is an urban legend that began with that 2006 social media post. No evidence has verified any of these rumours. Some believe that the Jukai village theory was actually inspired by a very real and frightening group that set up just outside of Jukai. This was the headquarters of the notorious Aum Shinrikyo. This doomsday cult is known worldwide, As a domestic terrorist group that produced the sarin nerve agent and then released it in a Tokyo subway during rush hour on March 20, 1995, the cult members carried bags of sarin gas and punctured them with the tips of their umbrellas as they walked off the train. During the ensuing chaos, many commuters fell to the ground gasping. As blood gushed from their noses and mouths, authorities dispatched chemical warfare units to the scene. The attack left 13 people dead and over 6,000 suffering from the effects of the nerve gas. Ayum Shirakiri produced the nerve gas at its headquarters on the south border of Jukai. The facilities have since been demolished. Just days after the attack, authorities raided this headquarters and discovered extensive operations of the Doomsday Cult preparing for future chemical and biological warfare attacks. They found enough sarin gas and other biological weapons to potentially kill millions, and they uncovered plots of the cult to target other subway systems around the world, including in New York. Regarding the cult's headquarters bordering Jukai, a pejorative phrase mocking the group spread around Japan, a parrot crows at the foot of Mount Fuji. To the Japanese, this meant that this doomsday cult was insignificant compared to the might of Japan. Ashoko Asahara was the mastermind of this cult. The mostly blind leader grew his hair long and let it hang around his shoulders and chest like a shroud. The straggly hair from his head and beard framed his face into a near caricature of a madman. Each day he wore a monochromatic outfit and sat barefoot in the lotus position to teach his followers. He declared himself savior of the world. He said he was invested with supernatural powers. Is deranged philosophy mixed philosophies of Hinduism, Buddhism, Christianity, and Nostradamus to promulgate and justify his beliefs. He taught that only his followers would be spared in the soon-to-come apocalypse. He managed to attract about 40,000 followers in both Japan and Russia, including many wealthy and educated people. Followers claimed the sarin attack and other planned attacks were meant to hasten the apocalypse. Many who opposed him publicly wound up missing or dead. This includes any who announced their intention to withdraw from the cult. By the 1990s, the cult began to amass weapons from Russia and run an illegal narcotics trade to raise money. In 1993, they sprayed anthrax-infected liquid from the roof of their building in Tokyo. The plan failed and no one was injured. In 1994, they used sarin gas in the neighbourhood where several judges lived. Their motivation for this was that they were predicting that these judges would rule against the cult in a land dispute. This time, 8 died and over 500 were injured, but no one knew who perpetrated the attack. That would not be known until after the 1995 subway attack. Many nations, including the United States, declared this doomsday cult to be a terrorist organisation. It was declared defunct in 2022. Asahara was arrested just 2 months after the sarin gas attack in the Tokyo subway. He received the death penalty and spent years in vain appealing it. The death penalty in Japan is quite unique and would not be acceptable in many other countries. In Japan, executions are still carried out by long drop hanging. Over 80% of the population still supports the death penalty and this method of execution. Per Japanese custom, the family, legal representatives, and general public would only be informed of the date of execution after the execution is complete. Part of the reasoning behind this is that prisoners would commit suicide if told the date in advance. So these terrorists receive their notice of impending execution just 1 hour before the execution takes place. Yes, that's right. They only have 1 hour notice before being hanged. On the morning of July 6, 2018, Mastermind Asahara and six other cult leaders or told that this will be the hour of their execution. Guards lead them to an execution chamber in the detention centre. A hood is placed over their heads and they face the long drop, which fractures their necks and causes instant unconsciousness and rapid death. The parrot would crow no more under the shadow of Mount Fuji. Many paranormal researchers wonder about this cult's effect on Jukai. Could its proximity to Jukai contribute to paranormal activity and the curses there? Or conversely, did Jukai's reputation influence them to set up headquarters there? These questions remain unanswered. Part 4. Time and space gone awry. Jukai is reported to be a place where space-time does not conform to normal functions, much like the Bermuda Triangle or similar anomalous geographies. This seems like something from science fiction, but two documented accounts in particular remain unexplained. reporter and explorer Kurihara, who has written three books about Jukai, recounts a strange experience in the area where suicides are clustered.
There are reports of a cursed altar in the forest near a thick tree. From this tree hang black and yellow ropes tied together around the trunk. Broken glass and debris litter the area at the base of the tree. A human femur sticks out of the ground like a spike. At the base of the tree is a flat rock used as an altar for the curse. Whoever fed the altar did so in a dangerous, rocky area difficult to reach. I thought this would be an interesting legend to debunk. I always approach my investigations into these rumors with healthy skepticism, expecting to find very little evidence of anything paranormal. I always expect to find a natural explanation for any strange experience I encounter, but I cannot explain what happened on these visits. It was strange that, on the one time, I went looking for the altar in that well-traveled area that I have been to on many occasions. I just happened to find it. That surprised me. But there I was, suddenly facing the altar that rumors say is cursed. Surprise gives way to gratitude, since I didn't have to spend all day looking for it and go home empty-handed. So I started looking around the altar. It is exactly as described. It even has a human femur bone sticking up like a stake marking the territory. I see various items sacrificed or left at the altar. These include canned goods, flower bouquets, and other accoutrements. It's just like something I might find at a Shinto altar. Since the flowers seem fairly fresh, I thought people must have come here recently. But next to the altar, I find something that startles me even more. Half buried under the leaf and detritus, I see the connecting bones of a human spine. I begin photographing the altar. I'm thinking, at least I have proof that it is real. Even though I don't believe in curses, the physical altar is genuinely here. Finding Parata, human skeleton, bothers me. I mean, a leg bone is one thing, and to be expected. I couldn't even verify if it was human or animal. But the spine, it's pretty clear where that came from. I just decided that this was part of a police investigation where they did not find all the bones. It's just another suicide at an eerie place. It does creep me out. So I guess it's just a little more than eerie. The hair on my arm stands on end, and I have an uneasy feeling like someone is watching. With proof on my camera, I start back, ready to leave this place behind. As I hike, my compass and GPS begin to malfunction. I know a magnetic floor can cause malfunctions from time to time, but I had never seen anything like this. I walk for 20 minutes trying to get back to the main trail. Then I look up and see it. Not the trail. I see then. The cursed altar. Somehow, I just walked in a circle. Now, I have been to Jukai on countless occasions. I have even helped the patrols sweep the forest. It seems improbable that I could have walked in a circle here. I tell myself, whatever, I'll just start over. This time, I walk for about 3 minutes. And there it is, the altar. I am a veteran here, I think. I can't be walking in circles. I know my way around better than that. This is the kind of thing that happens to amateurs. Not to me. This is really disturbing me. Like I mentioned, this altar is in a difficult to reach place. So how can I accidentally return to it? And this place really does have an off feeling to it. I point myself in the right direction and start out. And not 30 minutes later, I'm standing at the cursed altar again. By now, I'm doing some cursing myself. I stand there looking at it, kind of like, how dare you? Like it's alive or something. This is 3 times now I walked in a circle, and I spent 2 hours hiking. This time, fear starts to overcome me. Rain starts falling down around me. All sorts of thoughts run through my head. Perhaps the clouds are blocking GPS signals. Perhaps the magnetic ions are affecting the compass. Maybe I am just exhausted. But then why do I keep returning to the altar? I know I have not walked in a circle. I have walked in a straight line. And I would know if I am walking uphill to this altar in this hard to reach spot. And of all the places in Jukai, why do I end up at this exact spot, instead of 50 feet over, where I would not even see the altar, or down the hill? For the first time, I'm thinking that maybe there's something supernatural about this place. With darkness falling around me now, and with the chill of rain seeping through my clothes, I am determined to try this one last time. I pour all my focus into not going in a circle. I cannot fail again. In under 15 minutes, I find the main trail. Relief flows over me. But all the way home, I'm wondering if there is actually a curse or some scientific space-time anomaly around this place. I never believed in such things, but now I think of this as a forest trap.
Kirihara vows never to return to that spot, just in case. Next time, he might not make it back. When he publishes his next book about Jukai, he includes a map showing the location of many of the places where he confirmed legends or found corpses, but he decides not to put the location of the cursed altar on the map. He fears someone might actually go there and never return. The next incident is well documented on video, leaving little room for doubt that something strange happened at Jukai. It is January 26, 2008. A light blanket of snow covers the ground as a man walks just inside the freeway road on the border of Jukai. He is a magazine writer whose name has been kept confidential. He has written many articles about Jukai. Sometimes his videos contain strange shapes. He posts these on his blog and lets his readers comment on them. A number of them look like ghosts in the trees. This time he is recording by himself, walking down the path without the friends who normally accompany him. He always follows the same path in Jukai. This helps him find his way by following landmarks. This time, for some unknown reason, the video shows him veering off the path he normally takes. This is the first time he has ever strayed from his normal path. And this is the first time he has ever come here alone. He says in the video, "I feel something pulling me this way." He always went home before dark because it is so easy to get lost, and Jukai is so dark at night. Not this time. The video shows him trying to find his way back in the trees, but he cannot find his way out. When his friends later see the video, they cannot tell what path he took. It all looks very different from the normal route, almost like it is not the same Jukai at all. His footsteps become uneasy and unsteady after a couple hours. He keeps taking out his phone. The GoPro camera on his head shows the phone as he holds it up. The phone display shows no signal. He walks around trying to find some place with a signal. In that part of Jukai, he should have had a signal. It should not have disconnected. No one knows why it wasn't working that day. Soon it is pitch black outside. He still records non-stop and admits to being lost.
Why did the service on my phone go out? Which way do I go? I feel like I'm on the same road over and over. The battery is running out.
A few minutes later, the battery on his flashlight flickers and goes out. The video goes so dark that nothing can be seen. He switches his camera to night mode, but all he can see are trees. He cannot see any path and doesn't know which way to go. He decides to wait for dawn. Throughout the next little while, he will calm down and then suddenly get panicked and say strange things. But then sometime after midnight, the battery on his camera dies. They don't know what happens after that. This next day, his body is found. It is just off the main trail. Anyone should have been able to find the exit from there. No one can figure out how he could have died right there within sight of his destination. The autopsy determines that he froze to death. The police note that part of the body was skeletonized as if months had passed since death. His friends and family protest this. The deterioration makes his features unrecognizable and bones show over the body. His family says, "This cannot be him. Bodies do not decompose overnight, especially in the freezing cold." The doctors confirm that no animals could have done that to the body. The family demands further testing. They think it must be the body of someone who died many months back. DNA tests are performed, and they confirm that it was the reporter. The police treat it as a so-called distress death, but no one can explain the overnight decomposition that should take months. They also find his cell phone and camera next to the body. The phone has a charge and a signal at the place of the body. This does not match the video showing no signal or his statement that his battery is running out. His friends check through the phone. They find unsent messages from that cold January night. The reporter tried to send them, but due to lack of signal, they were stuck on the phone and never went through. These emails also show his altered state of mind.
I came to Jukai, but it got dark and I got lost. I think I'll know when it gets light again outside. My phone is strange. I can send emails, but I can't call. Jukai is a very difficult place to be in. I never thought I would get lost. LOL. Please come with me. Next time, it should be bright in 3 hours. I feel sick. I have muscle pains. I feel like I have been possessed by something. Did you get my emails? I'm sorry. Can you pick me up by car? If you see this email, please reply. I don't know how long until my battery phone runs out. I'm so tired. I have to sleep now for a bit.
Prior to the reporter's death, these two writers had been his friends for about 2 years. They had shot video with him at Jukai on previous occasions, and now they wish they had gone with him on that day. They may have been able to prevent this. Now, every year on the anniversary of the reporter's death, they visit the spot where his body was found and place flowers to remember him. On this day, it is January 26, 2018. They approach the spot near the mossy rocks like usual. One of the friends places a bundle of daisies on the rock. While they video, they pan around and take a few steps away from the rock. One of the friends is in the video and the other is taking the video. There is no one else with them. Without any cut in the footage, they then pan back around just 30 seconds or so later. Both of them gasp audibly. The daisies have wilted and started to rot. They appear to be at least 10 days old. Just moments ago, they were fresh. Now the flowers are dry and shriveled and the stems are brittle. One of them says simply as they zoom in on the flowers,
"Strange and unknown things happen in Jukai."
To many, this video is evidence that the notions of time and space have some different application in Jukai. Part 5. Sounds and Phantoms in Jukai. Visitors frequently report hearing voices, laughter and screaming, sometimes originating far above in the trees where the sounds could not possibly come from a person or animal. Many claim to see faces and figures in the trees. Some have taken pictures or videos of these dark forms in the forest. As with the Kerstedt altar, Kurihara attempts to debunk the rumours of mysterious sounds and strange sights. He and other sceptics claim that the sounds could be from moving leaves or scraping tree branches. It could be the wind or the sound of cars in the distance breaking through the forest wall of trees and seeing faces and figures. They claim it could just be a case of pareidolia, where the mind naturally forms faces out of shapes, long considered to be an evolutionary advantage for social situations and for detecting predators. But some experiences are not so easily explained. Even Kurihara admits experiencing these phenomena himself. Two incidents in particular stay with him. He cannot rationally explain them outside the paranormal. On one occasion, he and six other hardened veterans of Jukai are camping in the forest. The fire is dying, and the darkness of night is so absolute that nothing can be seen more than 30 feet away. Kurihara says he felt like he was in a closet with zero visibility beyond that wall of darkness. Suddenly they hear a sound like the laugh of several women. In unison, the heads of all seven men spin in that direction and they squint into the darkness, but they cannot see anything. One jokes nervously, "I heard women of the night." Kurihara also jokingly says, "This is like the Blair Witch Project. Strange things in the forest, and I can't explain them." They all agree there seems to be no natural explanation for what they all heard. Those were clearly the voices of women. To Kurihara's comment, one of the campers says there is one difference between Jukai and the Blair Witch Project. They all look to him expectantly. He continues, "Isn't it obvious? Unlike Blair Witch Project, this is real. It's happening to us." They hear nothing more and settle into their tents to sleep. In the morning, they start the fire again to warm up. One of them says, "Who got up to go to the bathroom about 3 o'clock a.m.? Another camper says, "I heard it too." They all shake their heads. "Not me," one says. "Far too cold to get out of my sleeping bag." A third says, "I left to go to the bathroom, but it was well before midnight, not even close to 3 o'clock. Kurihara says, "It must have been an animal." The two witnesses shake their heads. "No, not at all. It was two-legged and obviously wearing shoes." Kurihara digs a little deeper. "Did you see their flashlight?" "No, there was no light. it was Shikoku. This means the darkest of dark. Kurihara says no one can walk in that darkness without a light. Not in Jukai. Not even us. They talk further but are unable to attribute natural phenomenon to the sounds. Kurihara believes them when they swear it could not have been an animal. He still wonders what it was. A person living in the forest? Someone suicidal. He knows there are few animals in Jukai, making it even less likely to be an animal, and certainly nothing large enough to make footsteps sounds like a human. Rumours of wild dogs and bears in the forest have been debunked. And what about the women laughing? They all heard that. This incident still sits as a mystery to Kurihara. He never could explain the voices or the sounds of people walking. But there was another incident that spooked him even more. On that occasion, he finds himself guiding tourists through the forest in the cold weather of late fall. The incident occurs in the morning as the campers are rising up and preparing breakfast. Most are standing near their tents or crouching near the fire to warm up. Is he out of the trees? A boy about 14 years old suddenly runs right past the tent. He wears short sleeves and shorts. This is not the jacket and cold weather gear that would have been appropriate. In one hand, the boy holds a serrated hunting knife. He runs right by Kurihara with a blank expression on his face and a strange sideways smile. It is as if the boy does not realise anyone is there. As he runs straight through the camp, at that spot, there are no houses or buildings. There is only a rough mountain road leading from Jukai to Mount Fuji. There are no other campers. Kurihara describes it as the middle of nowhere. The boy disappears into the trees without saying a word or looking back. And Kurihara cannot see any sign of where he went. The boy never appears again. Kurihara never knows where he came from or where he went. He spends time wondering if the boy is from this world or a spirit from the other side. He finds it difficult to believe the boy was alive because nothing about the encounter makes sense. Short sleeves and shorts on a freezing cold morning in late fall, no family or other campers anywhere in sight. The only explanation that makes sense to Kurihara is that the boy really was a lingering spirit, or that this was some residual haunting. Shocked by the incident, Kurihara is still replaying the event in his mind. Over and over an hour later, he revisits each detail of the encounter. In these thoughts, he realizes he heard no footsteps. In fact, he heard no sounds at all as the boy passed their camp. Although normally a non-believer, on this occasion, Kurihara prays silently to himself, thinking for the first time this really is the devil's forest. The devil may pass even in sunlight. Part 6. The Woman in the Red Dress. Perhaps most famous of Jukai's urban legends. Is the tale of the woman in the red dress. In this story, a man in his 30s enters Jukai intent on committing suicide, but he has a change of heart after hiking into the forest and making preparations. Realizing he is hopelessly lost, he panics as he struggles to find his way out. For 2 days, he wanders in circles. He grows weak and dehydrated, and he is almost ready to give up. But then he sees something red contrasting against the blacks and greens of the trees. He approaches cautiously and sees a woman standing near a tree with her back to him. She wears a red dress. This is not clothing conducive to hiking. He closes in cautiously. He thinks this may be someone contemplating suicide, or it may be a ghost. Then she turns her head toward him, confirming she is alive. He calls out to her,
"I am lost. I can't find my way out of the forest. Can you help me?"
Her voice is calm and devoid of emotion.
"I too am lost, but perhaps we can find our way out together."
In another version of the legend, she happens upon him as he is about to commit suicide and convinces him not to kill himself. And she even admonishes him for making such a foolhardy choice. Subsisting on rainwater only, they walk for 2 more days together. Though she does not talk much and says nothing about herself, the woman is a constant companion for the man and brings him out of despair. He finds himself falling in love with her, but he feels hopeless with little water and no food. The woman would not take anything to drink, though he offered what little he had. Now, it all seems for naught because without food or water, he will die anyway. Just as he is about to collapse against a tree and give up, he hears people walking nearby in the forest. He turns to a woman in the red dress and begins running toward the sounds.
"Come on, we will be saved."
He keeps running, tripping over roots and stepping in holes. He yells out to the people,
"Over here, we are over here."
luck has found him at last. This is one of the suicide prevention teams on a sweep. The nearest volunteer sits him down to give him water and food.
She needs help too.
But when he looks, the woman in red is nowhere in sight. He becomes frantic, worrying about this woman that he has fallen in love with. He realizes she has never given him her name.
Where is she? The woman in the red dress. She was with me. Is she okay?
The volunteers sweep the area but do not find anyone else. There was no one else when we found you, they tell him. You were all alone. The man is saved, but he never sees the woman in the red dress again. This urban legend is so famous that it spawned videos and spin-off tales. Those who believe the story claim the woman is the spirit of someone who killed herself in the forest and regretted her decision. Now she wanders looking to help people avoid her mistake. Some believe the story itself may be real, but that the man was hallucinating from extreme stress, dehydration, and suicidal thoughts. Perhaps he had taken drugs to overdose himself, and these caused hallucinations. Some believe there may have been a woman, but she wandered off and did not want to be found. Skeptics say it is nothing more than an allegorical tale about loneliness, utilizing the rumors of ghosts at Jukai as a backdrop to give the tale verisimilitude. Like many urban legends, the exact roots of the tale cannot be traced, right? Perhaps the first appearance of this woman in the public mind arises from a true tale that happened on May 17, 1981. Each night, the branch manager of a local gas station drives down National Highway 139, where it cuts through Jukai by the lakes, with trees rising on each side like dark walls. He sees a soaked young woman in a red dress on the side of the road. Her dress stands as a stark contrast against the blackness of trees and night. When his headlights touch upon her, she raises her hand to signal him. He shakes his head and continues. But after a few moments, he thinks better of leaving the poor girl behind in the rain.
Did a U-turn. After about 3 kilometers, I looked where she had been at, but no one was there. In the years after that, I heard of cooks from the restaurants and taxi drivers who said they saw the same thing, but I never saw her again.
These are some of the mysteries surrounding Jukai. But one of the biggest mysteries has no paranormal element. In one of the wildest heists, probably the most famous in Japanese history, millions of dollars in cash were stolen. A plot develops that envelops the most well-renowned novelist in Japan. And they all connect back to Jukai in a story so crazy, it makes Ocean's 11 look like a walk in the park. This story next time on Mysterious Japan. As always, thank you for listening. For more information, please visit our website at themysteriousjapan.com. We look forward to you joining us again next time. Thank you.